Life Management Science Labs would like to acknowledge that we live and produce this podcast on the traditional lands of the Wurundjeri people. We'd also like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the lands of our listeners and our international colleagues. We'd like to pay our respects to their elders, past, present, and emerging. Hello, everyone, and welcome to CeraBoost, the Happiness Science Insights podcast produced by LMSL, the Life Management Science Labs. We're champions of life management science, providing structured insights informed by science and inspired by practice on key aspects of conscious living. Each week, we bring you scientific and practical insights on each element with the expert knowledge of professionals in the field. I'm your host, Lu Ngo, coming to your ears from NARM, Melbourne, Australia. Let's learn together.
Welcome back to the show. Lu is currently away, so I'm Marie, and I'll be filling in for her in the meantime. Now, today on CeraBoost, the Happiness Science Insights podcast, we'll be tackling the notion of building a positive self-concept for happiness that lasts. And to guide us through this discussion, we are consulting Melissa Robinson, Assistant Professor of Corporate Communication at Penn State University, who earlier this year co-authored a journal, How Activated Self-Concepts Influence Selection and Process of body positive narratives in media psychology. Hi, Melissa. Thank you for joining us today. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. How about you?
I'm doing fine. Thank you. That's great to hear that you're doing well. Now, could you tell us a bit about what sparked your interest in researching self-concepts, and has your own perspective changed on self-concepts as a result of conducting your research?
Yeah. So, I was introduced to the idea of how media influence self-concepts at my PhD program at Ohio State University. My PhD advisor was Sylvia Nalblock-Westerwick, and she researches a lot about how the media influence people's self-concepts. I came to her with a background and an interest in how the media influence people's health behaviors. And so she, you know, introduced me to her theoretical framework, which I'll talk about a little bit later when we get into defining self-concepts more. But I think that's where essentially I started to think about how the media around us can influence our self-representations.
That's such an interesting story. And I'd love to hear more about the importance of a positive self-concept and frankly, what a self-concept means and how to achieve one. But before we get started, I'd love to get to know you better. This is Have You Met Melissa? My first question for you is, what is your favorite book?
Okay, so I searched back because I've read a lot of mystery novels and I like just regular romance novels too. And I think one that really stands out to me is a series called Stephanie Plum by Janet Ivanovich. She's a bounty hunter who is just a really average, likable person. And a lot of my research centers around this person who is like an attainable, you know, similar to you person. So I think that series stands out to me. And I've done some research on it in the past too, for how that everyday regular character can resonate with us and inspire us. So that would be one that I remember.
And if you had to pitch this in an elevator to someone to get them to read the book, what would you say?
I think I would say, check out Janet Ivanovich's Stephanie Plum series. The character Stephanie, she's just this average, she's an average person with no like criminal justice background. She lands this bounty hunting job because she needs rent. She has no experience with catching criminals. And I think it's just inspiring, which we'll talk about. We'll talk about how, you know, media characters can inspire us later. But I think it just inspires us because it's that relatable character that we can see ourselves in a similar situation, you know, that's rather great. Than the unattainable celebrity. Yeah,
absolutely. And I can't wait to chat with you more about how media intertwines so much with our lives. My next question for you is, what movie have you been enjoying recently?
Yeah. So I'm actually going to change the question a little bit because I'm really into TV series.
Oh, that's perfect. So, yeah.
Yeah. I tend to just binge watch shows versus movies. And I think ones that I've been watching lately are Suits on Netflix. I've just gotten into that recently. Virgin River on Netflix too. And then just always Grey's Anatomy. Yeah. I've been watching that for years and years.
Oh man.
And it ties into my research too.
That's great.
It ties into research.
Yeah. It's completely fair that you prefer watching TV shows to movies. I feel like TV shows give you a bit more longevity with the emotional connection you have to the characters and just the storyline and the plot and everything. You know, you don't have to like pray for a second installment of the movie. So I totally feel you with that. I do like TV shows better for that reason as well. Now, is there a show in particular that has stood out to you in your lifetime of watching? Is there one that you hold the closest to your heart?
Yeah, I think probably Grey's Anatomy. I've been watching that, I don't know how long, 18 seasons, 19 seasons since I was an undergrad in college. And also I like it for research purposes too, because I use it to explain narrative persuasion and how I look at how the media do influence our health behaviors. Mm-hmm. So that would be my standout show.
Do you have a favorite character in Grey's?
Yeah, I would say probably Meredith would be my favorite character. They've changed so much. I miss her, you know, because she's not the center of the show anymore.
Yeah, sure. It's changed so much. I only watched the first few seasons, I think. And then up to a certain point, it got very, very grim and I couldn't watch it anymore. But I do like watch in passing when my best friend watches it. And I'm just like, it's unrecognizable. I cannot recognize it.
You know who I miss? I miss Jackson and his wife. I can't remember his wife's name now, but I miss that era.
I really, really miss the era of George.
Way back in the beginning.
Yeah, way back. I miss George. He was a pure soul. So moving on from Grey's, which we might revisit that later on. Are you a listener of podcasts?
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah.
Do you want to know one that I've been listening to recently?
Yeah.
Which actually ties into my research too. Under the Influence with Joe Piazza. I'm not sure if that's how you say her last name, but she dives into how social media can impact moms, like specifically like influencers, how they give us this unattainable, perfect lifestyle. The house is completely clean. You know, you do everything right with your children, and the impacts that can have on us as moms, which also ties into my research and we'll talk about. She's a little bit on like the negative side, which I like to look at the positive effects of media as well. Cause I do think, you know, we can learn a lot from it. But I've been listening to that recently just for some research ideas because I am interested in the impacts of the mom influencer and how that does make us moms feel, you know, if we're in this race to be the perfect mom and do the perfect things.
And this, I imagine like on both sides of the spectrum, there's like the good parts are probably like you feel like you're not alone in a lot of it. You see other people going through the same things, and sometimes they might talk about the same experiences that you might be experiencing. And then you feel like there's this solidarity, there's this togetherness, and it's like woman to woman, you know, or like you might have your partner alongside with you to support you and everything, but to have someone like parallel to you, knowing that someone's going through the exact same experience is kind of motivating almost, and just like keeps you going. But then the other side of it is like, they might be presenting it in just a very well, presentable way, and how you're going through it is completely different. And you're like, how is this person so put together when like my child's vomit is on the floor? And then you might start thinking like, oh, what am I doing wrong? So what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, it's so relatable. And I think, you know, I think especially maybe Facebook groups, I'm in some Facebook mom support groups. And I think that, you know, connecting with people who are more similar than you and not maybe at the influencer level, I think that that's a good place to get support for like, my baby's not sleeping or, you know, how do I feed my baby? Am I doing this right? But also I think like on the other hand, the influencers can give us good inspiration, which we'll talk about later.
Yeah, for sure. Facebook groups are a great, great way to connect with the community. And there's so many types of Facebook groups now. But aside from that, do you have a role model either in your professional or personal life?
Yeah, I'm going to give a couple. I'll talk about Dr. Melissa Cook. She's from my undergrad. When I went into undergrad, I was thinking that I would be in the business marketing aspect. Like I had no thoughts about being a professor someday, but she introduced me to the academic life. And I was like, I love it here. I want to stay here. So I would say her for sure. And then Sylvia from my PhD program, she introduced me to the wonderful world of research because at my undergrad, it was a teaching small liberal arts school. But then I went to Ohio State with Sylvia and was introduced to research. And I was like, I love this too. This is exciting. And I like to think I'm a nice blend of the both of them because, you know, I'm at a branch campus of Penn State. So it is a good teaching focus with some research too. So I think I'm a good blend or mix of both of them.
That's really sweet. And what qualities in your two role models do you look up to or do you strive to be?
I think definitely leadership. Sylvia is a leader. She is, you know, one of the most prolific researchers in the communication field. Super inspiring. She's very theoretically driven. She's also a methodological expert. So, you know, I can create a wonderful experiment based on what she's taught me. So I think from her, I get that like passion for research, leadership, and definitely like from Dr. Cook, just like the teaching aspect, the caring about your students, wanting them to succeed too. A nice blend.
That's really sweet. And it's great that you have such strong role models for your academic career as well. My last question for you that's kind of related to the last one. Is there a course that has inspired you?
Yeah. And I think I dug deep for this question. Thinking back to, I did my master's at Virginia Tech. And I was actually on this path. When I first went from undergrad to my master's, I was looking more at the rhetoric side of communication, which is more like analyzing texts for meaning. And I was like, this is good, but I don't know that this answers the questions that I have. And my advisor at Virginia Tech was teaching a persuasion class. And there was this whole section on narrative persuasion, which is really the area that I look at how we can learn from stories that are told through the media. And I was just like, this is what I want to do. Like this was like where my passion from reading and that Janet Ivanovich series came in. And I was like, this is what I want to do. I want to see, you know, how we can teach people these important health behaviors in a way that's not as upfront as, you know, here's a health brochure, you need to stop smoking or you need to lose weight. But the idea is, you know, if we put those into a story or into, you know, a TV show, a movie, you know, people can learn health information and not really realize that we're overtly trying to persuade them. Yeah. So I think that persuasion class was where I was like, this is it. I want to do a more like quantitative social science perspective for communication. And this can help me answer the research questions that I have better. So that persuasion class,
that's amazing. That's amazing because I've always felt like a lot of us learn the best from entertainment and we learn a lot from it in such a subtle way. We don't even notice it. I just never, like, there wasn't anything of substance that I could use to like back up my theory at all. So this is amazing. you're doing the work for me. That's so cool. Thank you for answering my questions. And I feel like we got to know you a bit better. Now I'm moving on to the interview section. And my first question for you, it's a pretty general one. We just want to get to know what happiness means to you.
Yeah. And I was thinking about this. And I think I would define happiness on a micro level and a macro level. Looking at the back, I guess we'll look at the macro level first. And I'm relating it to self-concepts a little bit, to thinking about like happiness. I kind of view it myself as thinking about, am I happy in certain like larger aspects of my life? Like, am I happy as a partner? Am I happy in my job? Am I happy as a parent? And I think those are harder questions to answer on that macro level, because I think, you know, you can think about, you know, like, am I satisfied? Am I content with, you know, my relationships, how I'm doing? We'll talk about how all that works, you know, with self-concept. And I think you can work to like that goal of happiness of like, yeah, I'm doing a good job at this. I'm satisfied with, you know, who I am as a parent, who I am as a partner. But I think there's also like the micro level of happiness too, of like, I'm a big person of, you know, trying to be present and live in the moment and know that, you know, especially as a parent, like some days are hard and things don't go as you expect them to. And you're like, I might have like lost my cool a little bit and I didn't want to. But I think like, it's good to think about like the moments of happiness that you have of like, you know, that was an enjoyable time when we did like a drive through for Christmas lights yesterday and went to the county fairgrounds. They had a little event and I'm like, that was fun. You know, like that made me happy. That was a good experience with my kids. And I think so, like, think like happiness ebbs and flows a little bit. And it's like, am I content? Am I satisfied? I'm like a big person of like embracing the routine of life. Like, I like to get in routines every day and trying to just find like happiness and satisfaction in there. I think COVID and the pandemic, like, you know, when we were all stuck at home for a while, I think that helped me kind of like embrace the routine and the normal and find happiness in that, because life can change, you know.
Yeah.
Something bad can happen and you seek that routine and that normalness, and I like to find my happiness there too.
Yeah, for sure. And what are some misconceptions you think that people often have about happiness?
I think just that we always have to be happy, or that we have to be perfect to be happy. Like, I think it's okay to live in the messiness and embrace the messiness, you know, especially like as a parent. I have a 18-month-old and a 5-year-old, and, you know, there's a lot of just like, with the two of them, there's just like a lot of conflict and fighting over toys. And like, sometimes I just want to pull my hair out and be like, oh my gosh. Yeah. But then like, I've learned to like embrace the moments where they're playing nicely together or it's calm. And I'm like, this is nice. This is, you know, this is calm. This is content. I'm content here. So I think misconceptions are just like, we always have to be happy. It's okay, you know, it's okay to acknowledge that we go through difficult times and that things aren't perfect, but I think we always want to just try to be striving for that goal of satisfaction or being content with who we are and where we're at in certain aspects of our life. And you might be happy, like you might be happy and satisfied as, you know, as a partner with your family life, and, you know, you might not be as happy at work, and you got to think about, you know, what's not making me happy there, and what can I change? If there's anything you can change, what can I do?
Yeah, for sure. And now that we've established what happiness means to you, could you tell us a bit about your definition of a self-concept?
Yeah. So, and I'll pull a little bit from Sylvia's research. She put together this short, it's a CESA model, selective exposure, self and affect management model. And she defines self-concepts there as they're self-representations of yourself. So how you view yourself in different areas of your life. So for example, like the example I've given before, like how do I see myself as a parent? Or how do I see myself as a professor? How do I see myself as a partner, a daughter, you know, a granddaughter, any aspect of your life. So these are how you feel about yourself. And factors that go into that are, you know, your self-esteem. There's an emotional, affective component to, you know, whether you see yourself in a positive or negative light. Your demographics, your motivations, all are wrapped into that element of your self-concept. And what I guess what my research looks at is how the media can impact our self-concepts. But, you know, other people can influence our self-concepts and how we feel about each other or how we feel about ourselves. Body image is a facet of self-concept, which I've looked at some too. So I look at mostly, like I said, how the media can impact our self-concepts with the idea that we can manage our self-concepts with our media use. There is an element of social comparison that goes into our media use motivations. So we might be using media for self-consistency. So to maintain a self-concept, for example, we might say, you know, I'm a part of this political party, and you might seek out information that supports, you know, the attitudes and beliefs that you currently have with that political affiliation. And, you know, subsequently you're like, yeah, I consider myself to be a knowledgeable member of this political party. So we're like, maintaining that self-consistency. But we might also be we could use the media too for self-inspiration. So looking at, and I do this a lot, like looking at different influencers. I look a lot at the positive parenting on social media because I want to do that more, you know? So I think like, okay, I want to learn more about how to be that positive parent. So kind of like seeking that information is inspiration, learning and inspiration to try to improve.
Would that by any chance be similar to, let's say, watching a show and having a character and resonating with that character and kind of like looking up to that character for I wouldn't say life inspiration, but kind of like essentially. My next question was going to be, what does it mean to have a positive versus neutral versus negative self-concept?
Yeah. So I think with like a positive self-concept, I think that's where that happiness comes in. And you're like, I have a good understanding of who I am in this aspect of my life. You know, so I have a good idea, you know, I'm satisfied with how I am as maybe professionally in my role as an instructor at a university. Like I feel confident. I feel like I'm a good teacher. I get good feedback from my students. So that would be like the outside element, you know, helping to enhance my self-concept. So I think like if you are satisfied, confident with where you are in that specific self-representation, that's where you have that more positive self-concept. That's where you'll do maybe some of that maintenance or consistency to with your media seeking to see like, yeah, this is the type of person I am. And, you know, I'm reaffirming it with the media that I consume. Let's do negative first, because that's probably an easier one. So when you think of having a negative self-concept, I think body image is probably probably the easiest example there where, you know, you might not have the body type or body size that you particularly want. And that's where you have that negative feeling, the negative affect, negative, you don't have, you know, self-esteem or self-confidence in your body size. And that's where you would have that negative self-representation of yourself because you're not happy with how your body looks. And that's where you might, you know, unfortunately, like you might come across the thin ideal in the media and that makes you feel worse about yourself. And that's where like, you know, we might want to think about some other strategies that we can talk about later. But, you know, if you have that negative representation of yourself, you might avoid certain types of media that make you feel bad about yourself. One of the examples that we like to use is, you know, thinking about maybe if you're a football player who, you know, you went to a big championship game, you had a big playoff game and you lost, you know, that made you feel bad about yourself. You're probably, you know, struggling with some feelings about, you know, am I a good player? You know that you're a good player, but at that time it's hard. You know, am I a good player? And that's where you might avoid those sports movies where, you know, people are winning the championships. You might not even turn on any other type of football that's currently on TV because you want to avoid anything that's making you feel bad about yourself. And having a neutral self-concept, I think that's, I don't know, like, is that a goal? And I'm thinking this in like the area of body image where, you know, we have the body positivity movement, but there's also criticism with the body positivity movement that, you know, we are still like hyper-focused on our bodies and our size. And, you know, we're still just perpetuating that obsessiveness with bodies. And then there's this push for like more body neutrality where we're like, you know, my body is good because it functions and does the things that it needs to do. Like, you know, helps me breathe and move around and, yeah. And like, that's good. That is still good. So I guess I'm thinking of like having a neutral self-concept might just be like being okay with where you are at a certain time and knowing like, you know, I'm okay. You know, I might not have achieved my goal in this area. Like, you know, I'm an assistant professor. My goal is to get tenure. So maybe it's just like being okay, you know, like I'm on the progress, I'm on the track to get tenure and I'm okay with where I'm at right now. It's not where I want to be just yet, but it's a work in progress.
So it's maybe? Neither like a, it's neither like, beating yourself up nor hyping yourself up. And would you think that that might be kind of the goal for some people?
Yeah. And I think so. Like when I think of my body image, like I've had two kids. It's like I'm not like perfect anymore. Like it's like having kids has changed my body, but it's like it's good enough. Like it's you know, it's doing what it should do. Mm-hmm. And I'm okay with it, you know? Yeah. Like, I'm okay.
Yeah. And so what foundational principles or theories did your research uncover regarding the relationship between self-concepts and body positive narratives?
Yeah. So this was really interesting. Okay. This study looked at, we compared, it was an experiment. So we had women who were randomly assigned to read a version of the narrative that was like the traditional thin ideal with women with like a positive self-image, like so a confident thin person. And then we also had like a confident large bodied person. We had a larger bodied person who was also had low self-confidence. And then we also had the thin woman who had low self-confidence. And what we found is like people found the thin woman with low self-confidence as like a not very likable character, kind of like, you know, you're a thin person, shouldn't you be happy? Which I thought was a little bit interesting. What we found was that well, we found some good results that like the larger character with positive body image, she did improve women's own body image for themselves more than, you know, the traditional thin ideal woman who had high self-confidence, which was good, you know. So women, like, they liked reading about the larger character with high self-confidence, and that helped them, you know, have that same self-confidence. Mm-hmm. But what we also found though was there was, for some people, there was this element of social comparison, and they were like, it's good for, I'm happy that that larger bodied character is confident in themselves, but I still want to be thin. Or they like self-enhanced against that larger body character if they were a thinner person, and they were like, you know, that helped improve their own body esteem. So we found some not so great effects that could maybe even like perpetuate the stigma that we have towards, you know, larger bodied people and like still embracing that thin ideal. It was like, that's nice that she wants to be thin, or that's nice that she's confident in her larger body, but I still want to be thin. Mm-hmm. Which makes me like think like we're still not there. We're still not there then with like body positivity. Because we still have this drive for the thin ideal.
Yeah. So with that being said, does one's self-concept contribute to their level of happiness?
Yeah, I think so. I think that having, you know, positive, neutral, a work in progress self-concept can influence your happiness, your well-being, your self-confidence, you know, knowing who you are as a person. Mm-hmm. I think those are all interrelated factors.
And so apart from happiness, what else can a positive self-concept bring to the table?
Yeah, so apart from happiness, I would say that self-confidence, you know, knowing who you are as a person. And I think also, you know, if you have that positive self-concept, I think that seeing those media portrayals of, you know, the perfect person is less damaging when you have that positive or neutral self-concept. So I think you're able to brush off the thin ideal. Like if you're a person who, you know, may have a larger body, but you have that positive self-concept, I think it's easier to like brush off the pressure of the thin ideal when you see it in the media. So I think that helps, you know, helps you have a little bit of a thicker coat when you see things on the media, or even people making mm-hmm. comments about you, obviously, because that's a big one too. I think if you have that positive mm-hmm. self-concept, people saying something negative about you might not be as damaging.
For sure. And on an individual level, what does it take for us to develop a positive self-concept? Are there any specific strategies or exercises that we can do to develop a positive self-concept?
Yeah. And I think I'm going to answer that question mostly from a media perspective versus, mm-hmm. you know, focusing on what other people might say about you.
Sure.
I think, yeah, and I'll use this example. I'll use an example of myself as a parent and trying to improve my parenting self-concept. So, you know, I think I have like a little bit of like a strong-willed, stubborn 5-year-old. And I find that, you know, like how to get through tantrums or try to change his mind. I find that I am seeking out Instagram. I'm seeking out like Instagram people who talk a lot about positive psychology, the mom psychologist. I follow her because she gives a lot of this good information for how to, you know, like how to connect with your child first. How to show empathy when things are hard. Like, I don't know. It's just stuff that's like not supernatural. It's hard, you know, to say something like, you know, this looks hard for you, and then, you know, go through what you should be going through. So I think like I work on, you know, developing my positive parenting and improving my parenting self-concept so that I feel, you know, I feel more confident that I can engage in these conversations with my child. And that helps me feel like a more confident parent. So I think like seeking out media that can help you improve your self-concept is a good idea. And I also think, you know, I wish that here in the U.S., when I speak to my students at school and I ask them, like, have you had any media literacy taught to you in high school? And they're like, no, we don't talk about this stuff. So I think just like, you know, starting with some basic media literacy, understanding media effects, too, can help people, you know, can help you see like what are the positive aspects of media consumption and what are some of the negatives, and especially like focusing on how the media can negatively impact our self-concepts related to body image, or, you know, thinking about like social media with teens, like that's a whole animal that we don't even have time to talk about that today, but just like understanding how comparing with others online can make us feel bad about ourselves. Like that's all influencing our self-concepts and our self-confidence of like, you know, like I'm not a attractive partner to, you know, people at school or something like that. So I think just, you know, being aware of how the media can influence us, and, you know, and we can use that for power. Like I said, like we can seek out that information to help us improve our self-concepts related to, you know, parenting or being a partner or, you know, our careers. But on the other hand, we need to be aware. And that's where they like that podcast that I mentioned earlier, Under the Influence, because they point out, you know, like the negative impacts that influencers and social media can have on our self-concepts, our self-esteem.
Yeah, for sure. And I feel like incorporating media literacy as like a subject or something that's taught in high school or middle schools or elementary schools would for sure help with, you know, circumventing some of the negative effects as well, because we weren't like, it's not a part of the curriculum at the moment purely because it never was part of the curriculum. But if we think about it, media is so intertwined with our lives now. Like, it's undeniable. There's almost no way that, you know, it's not a part of our lives. And we have to teach kids and young people how to use it, how to look at media, and aside from that, it's also just like, you know, learning how to identify fake news or, you know, things like that, how to use media essentially, because that's how to use the world, how to get around the world. So that's such a great idea. So what challenges do you think people would face in pursuit of a positive self-concept?
Yeah, and I think that's, if you're using media consumption for a positive self-concept, the risk is, you know, we're looking at these influencers maybe for inspiration. And there's always this element of social comparison, you know, how do I measure up? How am I doing? And when we find that the results might not be attainable, that's when we have the negative media effects where we feel worse because, you know, we can't do this. So, you know, body image is this simple example where you're like, I might be seeking out some content for inspiration. Like, I want to work out more. I want to diet, something like that. So you might be seeking out that content and finding, okay, this body size that I am hoping for is not attainable for me. And that's where you get those negative impacts. So I think that's where like having media literacy or even understanding that, you know, this could be the negative impacts of the information that you're seeking can harm us or make us feel worse about ourselves. But, you know, the hope would be that you are, you know, seeking out information that is helpful and can help you attain your goals. Because I wanted to mention a couple of times, like thinking about parenting information in particular, I've seen research out there that we are going to peers on the internet for health information more so than our doctors anymore. So I think that's where like there can be a benefit to, you know, seeking that information out on social media too. You know, not saying, I'll give you the example for like sleep, for example, my doctor in particular, when my 18 month old wasn't sleeping well, like their advice is typically like the cry it out method. And I don't love it, but I think that's where like having that community of moms that can give you some different tips or tricks to try that you might not get from your physician. I think that's, you know, a benefit of being able to like seek out the information. And that's where it can, you know, it can fit into our parenting self-concept of like the cry it out method doesn't fit for me. That's not the person that I am. I want something more gentle. And I think that's where you can seek out that information on the media, media to try a different method that might work for you better than just like the traditional cry it out method.
For sure. And my last question for you is, what advice do you have for people who might be struggling to maintain or to even achieve a positive or even neutral self-concept?
Yeah. So I think, and I'll give, I actually just recently watched that Under the Influence podcast with Joe Piazza. She had an influencer that like completely quit social media 100% for her well-being. And I think that's like one, that might be one of my suggestions, and not to go to that extreme, but you know, if you're struggling with how you feel, with having a negative self-concept in a certain area, then it might be a good idea to, you know, take a break from social media, maybe unfollow some influencers that may be particularly triggering for you. You know, taking a break from it is okay. Taking a step back, you know, avoiding the shows that, you know, aren't very enjoyable right now until you have the ability to build back some of your positive positive self-concept or a more neutral one.
Yeah, that's actually a great idea. I remember, that's probably what I do as well, but with TV shows, Gilmore Girls was one of my comfort TV shows for the longest time. But for some reason, I just got really, really sad watching it after a while. Just like, I think it was the relationship between Emily, the grandmother, and Lorelai, the mother. And it was just really, really sad and triggering to watch. And I just kind of stopped, and out of sight, out of mind, I felt a lot better after that. Yeah, exactly. And that might sound like you're just avoiding the problem, but sometimes that's like, you know, if something's triggering you, that's what you have to do, you know? Yeah, that makes total sense. Thank you so much for answering our questions. Now we'll move on to the practices and habits section. My first question for you is, what practices do you engage in to cultivate or maintain a positive self-concept?
Yeah, so I think, and this is maybe like taking a step back from social media or from the media in general a little bit, but I think like, and this is corny, but I have about almost an hour drive to work both ways. And I think one of the areas where I struggle sometimes in maintaining that positive self-concept is, you know, being an assistant professor on the tenure track. Like, I'm always worried, like, am I doing enough research? Am I going to get enough studies done this year? Am I going to get enough stuff published this year? You know, and also like there's this element of like being able to find external reviewers who are familiar with your work in the field. And sometimes I have that imposter syndrome. Yeah, I don't know if you've heard of that before.
Sure. Yeah. Like, yeah.
Like, I don't know anything here. Yeah. I'm just a little kid or something.
Yeah.
So sometimes I have that imposter syndrome. And I think it helps to, you know, when I'm driving, like I think about, you know, I think about making a mental list of, you know, the positive things that I've achieved in my job recently, or even thinking of like feedback that I've received from, like recently I had an editor from a journal who said I had a considerable amount of expertise in my research area. And I'm like, oh, wow, like he's a pretty well-known person in the field. Thank you. Yeah. So I think just like trying to engage in that positive thinking, you know, making a list of your achievements in that area, and also understanding that, you know, like things aren't perfect and life isn't easy, and you know, you'll go through difficult times and then you'll, you know, get to some easier times, some more successful times. So I think just like reflection and thinking about positive qualities and knowing that like you'll get through the hard times and, you know, things will return to normal if that's what you want, or better. So I think like engaging in that self-reflection, even if you like to write, you know, writing a list of positive qualities, I think that can help on top of, you know, like seeking out, you know, media sources that might inspire you or provide you with information. I think that's, Those are ways to try to maintain that positive self-concept and that confidence. Like even like, you know, seeking therapy, counseling, if you need some help in that area too.
That's great advice. And congratulations on getting such great feedback on your work. Must have felt like such a huge accomplishment. I just imagine because I just finished my master's and I had to do a thesis for it. And the whole time, like, I imagine that's how you feel too, but mine's just on a way, way smaller scale. You know, the entire time you're just thinking, I don't know what I'm doing at all. Am I even doing this right? Like, you know, so getting feedback like that from someone who's so renowned in this field is just incredible. I must feel amazing.
Cling to it, you know, cling to that when you're having those moments of self-doubt. Like, remember that one time?
So with regards to the practices that you've shared with us, what are some challenges to doing them?
I think, you know, getting in your head, like having that self-doubt. I think it's easy to, you know, it's easy to focus again on the negative. And I think that's where, you know, you want to try that positive thinking. I tell my public speaking students, who may have some public speaking anxiety, like visualize success. I'm like, this is super corny, but you know, visualize success the night before your speech, when you're laying in bed, like envision yourself, close your eyes, envision yourself walking down the aisle, coming up to the front of the room and like envisioning things going well. So I think just, you know, it's easy to get into that more like negative mindset of like, this is bad, everything's going wrong. And I think that's when I tell them like the self-fulfilling prophecy in public speaking, like you're going to make yourself that nervous wreck and things aren't going to go well because you're so nervous that things aren't going to go well. So I think just like trying to maintain, like trying not to let those negative thoughts consume you. And that's where sometimes maybe it might be helpful to, you know, think of seeking therapy too, you know, especially if you're struggling with really negative thoughts about yourself. It's helpful to have an outside perspective too to help you walk through those negative thoughts.
And how often do you think it would be good to practice these habits?
I think as often as you need to when you're struggling. You know, I would say maybe like every couple weeks, I might think of the positive thoughts. I might have to do it a little bit more in like the parenting aspect too, of like, you know, sometimes when I'm tired, it's easy to resort to the yelling, consequences.
When you've got a stubborn 5-year-old with an attitude, you've got to do it more often, I feel like.
So like, and then I think back, I'm like, oh, today didn't do well. Today I didn't do as well. I'm pretty tired, you know, and I got to think like, I'm going to try and be better tomorrow. But I think as often as you need to, like when you feel yourself slumping back into those negative thoughts, like give yourself some time to think about the positives again, or you know, seek out some media that might make you happy, or like provide some stress relief too.
Yeah. So based on the experience, do you have any other recommendations of practices to be combined or improved with these practices that you've just shared with us?
I think that about wraps it up. Like, you know, trying to visualize success, positive thinking, making a list of, you know, positive qualities, either writing it down or thinking of it whenever you need to mentally. I think that's about it.
All right. Amazing. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. Now we're moving on to questions from the audience. The first question we have is, when I hear my voice back in recordings, it sounds different than how I imagine it sounds. If I can't trust my voice to sound the same, how can I trust that my perception of myself isn't wrong as well?
Oh, that's a good question.
That's an interesting one.
And like, I think those things too, like, how am I going to sound in this voice recording? I think those might be two like separate areas of concerns. I think, you know, yourself, you've been, you know, however old you are, you've been hanging around yourself for so long. And I think, you know, think about your self-representations. And this might be also where it might be helpful to seek, you know, think about, like, ask your friends, what do you think about me? Or close family members, like, this is how I view myself. Is this how you view me too? And maybe some affirmations from another person might help too. So seeking out someone that you're close to confirm or affirm what you think about yourself might be a good idea. Or even, you know, like, if you are struggling, maybe counseling or therapy. I talk to a therapist probably once a month at least, just with like everyday stressors. And I think that person can help you, you know, like affirm that what you think about yourself is true too.
For sure. And I'm not sure if it's just me, but I'm thinking about it now and I feel like voices and recordings, whether it's myself or someone else, they just sound different than in real life. They just do sound different. So I feel like that's probably a separate thing from,
yeah, I like, think it's separate. I used to think I was like a really good singer, and then you hear yourself on the recording coming back and you're like, what, that doesn't sound like me, but I guess it is.
Our next question is, sometimes my desires and feelings get the better of me and I make impulsive decisions. How can I build positive self-esteem when I don't feel like I'm in control?
Okay, so I think for this question, and I tell my husband this too, because he's a little bit of like responding. He responds on emotions at times. And I think, you know, if it's a time where you can, if it's like an email that somebody sends you or a text message and you feel like emotional about that topic, like give yourself as much time as you can to kind of like neutralize your feelings so that you can respond with a level head. So I would, you know, if it's an impulsive decision that you're making, speaking with somebody, I would just say, or even say like, you know, can I have a couple minutes to think about this before I give you a response back? You know, giving yourself a few moments to try to think, you know, rationalize, think level-headed before you respond to a person might help. Mm-hmm. I think like impulsive decisions, like purchasing something, I've done that before. And then I feel, you know, I feel guilty about like, oh, I shouldn't have spent that money. Cause it was just like, you know, you buy something and it's like a quick fix, like, oh, that made me feel better for a few moments. And then like, I regret buying that. So I think, you know, giving yourself a moment or two before you have to respond to something so that you don't make too quick of a judgment. And I think like also just engaging, you know, trying to engage in positive thoughts.
Yeah, for
maybe
sure.
Consuming, you know, if it's like an area that you want to improve, you know, doing a little bit of research to try to improve.
Yeah. And to add to that, I feel like, you know, you are not your impulsive decisions. Like you might have you might make impulsive decisions, but you know, that's not all that you are. There are like positive parts to you or to your character. So it's important to like, yes, maybe these impulsive decisions, that's something you might want to work on, but that doesn't make the person that you are. That's not the entirety of you. So it's important to just remember there are good parts to you, and that maybe might help.
Yeah, we might, you know, you might make a mistake or not react in the way that you wanted to, but you know, and that's easy. Like, it's easy to think about like the embarrassing moments that you've had and like cling to those and be like, oh my God, why did I do that? Like, but it's more like that person has moved on and they're not even thinking about it anymore.
Yeah, absolutely. So our final question is, how do external influences such as social media or societal expectations impact one's self-concept and overall happiness?
Yeah, and this is a really good question. And this is where it can go either positively or negatively. We can use those influencers as, like I said, like a source of inspiration where, you know, we might say like, I like the parenting behaviors that they engage in and I want to be, you know, more like that with my kids too. But then there's also this like really commercial element too of like, you know, they have really big houses, maybe their houses are really clean, like their children look perfect, they have the perfect marriage, it looks like they're always happy, and that I'm not like that, you know, like my life's not that perfect. And I think that's where it can be detrimental, because, you know, are we chasing this lifestyle that's not attainable? But that's where like having that media literacy aspect hopefully can help you to say like, these people are only representing the positive aspects of their lives, and you know, everything might be staged. Like back here, my countertop back here has nothing on it right now. Like my house looks really clean, but previously before this podcast, there were papers and things everywhere. So like just realizing that, you know, that these people are only putting forth the best versions of themselves, and, you know, they're not perfect either, you know?
Yeah, for sure. And without like keeping that in mind, it sounds like that inspiration or that like looking up to someone for inspiration could very easily turn into envy as well. So it's really important to keep that in mind. Thank you so much, Melissa, for sharing all of that with us and for answering our questions. Now we're moving on to the open mic section, and this is your chance to talk about whatever that you're passionate about. It doesn't have to be related to the topic. So the floor is yours. Take it away.
Yeah. So, you know, one aspect that I didn't talk about as much today and that I'm really thinking about is this aspect of self-enhancement. Because I gave some examples of like social comparison, where we're looking at people for self-inspiration, self-consistency, you know, to maintain our self-concepts. Well, I talked about it a little bit with body image, but like, what about this aspect of self-enhancement where we, you know, we're looking at a downward comparison other to make ourselves feel better about ourselves? And I gave that example with the body image where, you know, some of the thinner people in our study said like, oh, you know, that's nice. You know, that's nice that the larger bodied woman has high self-esteem, but I still have that drive to be thin. And I'm thinking about like what the implications of this are, because like in the body image area, it is like, you know, that possible continued weight stigma of, you know, the drive to be thin, that's best. But in some of my other research, I've been looking at some characters that are not perfect. This is where we'll tie in the Stephanie Plum story from beginning, these like maybe more attainable characters. So what I'm looking at in these studies is using like a narrative. There are mysteries where a person, it's just this everyday person, and they either solve this mystery of like catching a criminal or they let them go. And I've put in some health behaviors in there. So I put in sleep, like this person's trying to improve their sleep health behaviors. And then I have another story where a person is trying to improve their alcohol consumption behaviors. And what I do in the study is I manipulate their health-related self-efficacy. So I have these high self-efficacy individuals who are like doing this great job at trying to improve my sleep and avoiding alcohol. And then I also have these negative characters, not so negative, but people who are struggling to engage in these healthy behaviors. So they have lower self-efficacy and they're not sure that they can engage in the healthy sleep behaviors. And they think they might, for the alcohol story, they think they might like relapse and drink alcohol again. And what I found is only in the alcohol narratives, when people engaged in like this element of self-enhancement and contrasted against the character who was struggling, like the character who had low self-efficacy and engaging in the healthy alcohol behaviors. So that participant, they engaged in contrasting and they were like, I don't want to be like that character. So they reported increased alcohol-related self-efficacy, like they had more self-efficacy to engage in the healthy alcohol consumption behaviors. And what I'm finding is that like this dislikable character in some other studies, this like dislikable character is motivating and it's more effective than the likable character or the character engaging in the healthy behaviors.
Yeah. That's Which I really think is interesting. That is so interesting. Yeah. That's incredibly interesting.
This is my new area of like having to self-enhance against this character that's struggling, not engaging in good, healthy behaviors. And I'm like, what does that mean though? Like, what are the implications of self-enhancing against that negative character to make yourself feel better? Like, is that okay? Because yeah, I'm sure we do these things. Maybe we don't say them out loud like, oh, I looked at this downward comparison other to make myself feel better. I don't know. Maybe we do say this out loud. I don't know. And like, I think that's like an area that I'm interested in and I'm like thinking about what the next step is, but I'm finding it's not always like that perfect role model in the healthy behaviors improving people, and maybe it's an attainability issue.
Maybe it's too hard to like aim for that like so-called perfection in a role model, but it's easier to really be put off by an unlikable character and be like, I don't want to do that anymore. Maybe that's what it is. So how far along are you with this research?
Yeah, so I have a couple studies, like the one I just talked about, the alcohol and sleep. That one is that one's accepted to be published in Communication Reports. So I have like a couple studies. The one with the dislikable character, that was a long time ago, back in my PhD program. But I'm like thinking about, and I'm finding like I think this differs. It might differ based on like males versus females. So I don't know. Those are my thoughts and what I might be working on in the future.
That is so cool. And I can't wait to see what else you come up with and what you uncover. Thank you, Melissa, for joining us today. If our listeners want to find out more about you and follow your work, where can they go?
Yeah, you can follow me on X, formerly known as Twitter. It's Dr. MJ Robinson. Or you could send me an email, mjk452@psu.edu.
All right, amazing. We'll link those in the show notes. Thank you everyone for tuning in and we'll catch you in the next episode.
You have been listening to Sarah Boost, the Happiness Science Insights podcast produced by the Happiness Science Labs, a division of LMSL, the Life Management Science Labs. More episodes are available from 10 Life Management Perspectives and can be found by searching LMSL on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, and other podcasting apps available on your devices. If you enjoyed this episode, please rate, share, and subscribe to our channel so that other people can find it and we can continue to provide quality content. More of our work can be found on our website, ha.lmsl.net. where you can join our movement. I'm Lu Ngo. Thanks for tuning in.